Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO, in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, October the 26th, 2012, and it's the World Vegan Day Show, which is coming up next week on November the 1st. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Alyssa Ray.
Hello.
And our guest co-host, Jackie McIntosh.
Hello.
Welcome, everyone. Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and vegan radio program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the same rights that humans take for granted. This program can be heard every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and is also streamed live at coopradio.org and available as podcasts on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. For our first segment today for World Vegan Day, we have an interview with activist Camille Labchuk, who hails to us from Toronto, Ontario. If her name sounds familiar to you, that may be because she recently finished a term as a federal Green Party councillor in Ontario, or it may be because she also made national news earlier this year when she went to the Ontario Human Rights Commission to put forth a proposal to include ethical veganism to be protected under the Human Rights Code in that province. She'll be here on the show today to speak with us about this endeavor and what it could mean for protecting vegan beliefs in the future under the eyes of the law. And for our feature interview today, also in honor of World Vegan Day, we have with us registered dietitian Ginny Messina to answer all of our vegan-related nutrition questions, or at least as many as we can get in 23 minutes. Ginny is a wealth of knowledge when it comes to nutrition, and especially vegan nutrition at that, and I'm so pleased to be able to have her here today to share with us her sound knowledge on the various facets of this widespread topic. We asked you, our listeners, to send in your nutrition questions for Ginny, and so we'll be asking many of those on the show today. This interview is coming up in 28 minutes, so please stay tuned. Alyssa.
Yeah. So it's time for us to ask you to support us again. I'm asking you from my heart to step up today and give us a call and become a member of Co-op Radio. It's our fall membership drive, and I will let you know our number right now so you can pick up the phone. 604-684-8494. We have volunteers waiting to take your call. I just wanted to remind you, of course, that this is Vancouver's Co-op Radio. We're a non-commercial, cooperatively owned, listener-supported community radio station located in the heart of the downtown east side of Vancouver. Co-op is a voice for the voiceless that strives to provide a space for underrepresented and marginalized communities. And of course, Animal Voices is week after week representing the voices of animals suffering who need our help. And I just wanted to tell a bit about my story and how I came here and how when I first joined 2 years ago, I declined the offer first.
I remember that. We were all gung-ho about having you, and then you said, well, what did you say?
And then I just thought I didn't have the skills. I didn't, I wasn't confident with my voice. And
it's a really good segue
And I just thought that, I didn't have what it took, or it was for someone else. And then I was asked again some months later, and I decided to step up. And what really amazed me about Co-op Radio is the amount of support for training to use your voice better. There's workshops here on how to interview. There's workshops on how to learn how to run the board and how to make great journalism. These are free workshops that you can attend as a member of Co-op Radio. You can learn what it takes to be a programmer and all the rules of the CRTC and everything. And I'm just telling this story as an example of how grassroots and community involved this is, that everyone really is welcome to share their stories on this station. And I feel just very thankful for this opportunity. And it's been a wonderful journey for me over 2 years. And I look forward to contributing more over that time. And I was actually just looking over what we have covered just in the last year. And It's incredible the work that we do here at Animal Voices. It's all 100% volunteer run, and I just want to say that how important it is that we give all different kinds of groups and people a platform to talk about how they're working to help animals and working to promote vegetarian, vegan lifestyles. All the local groups we give a platform to, Stop UBC Animal Research, Fur Bear Defenders, Liberation BC, Shark Truth, A Better Life Dog Rescue, the BC SPCA. They've all spoken on our show this year. We've also talked to many Canadian groups that probably aren't covered in the media very often, such as the Canadian Horse Defense Coalition and the Animal Rescue Corps. And we've covered so many other issues beyond just the typical animal rescue and animal advocacy, such as the antibiotics in our meat system, the rights of slaughterhouse workers, fat phobia and body positivity, animals and anarchism, so many different issues. So, of course, what it takes to be a member here at Co-op is you call 604-684-8494, and we do need your help to keep producing these amazing shows. And how you become a member is... Well, there's many different ways. You don't actually have to give a set amount. It just depends on what you can afford. And all members are considered equal. You can pay yearly or monthly. I myself give a $10 per month to Co-op Radio, and I don't feel it at all. And at the end of the year, I get a tax receipt, which is pretty awesome. And yeah, it's basically pay what you want. So anything that you can give helps us reach our goal. And what it is the fall member drive has a goal of $30,000, and it's just wrapping up. Tomorrow is the last day of the fall member drive. We've already made at the station over $24,000. We're almost at the goal.
That's great. But we have our own personal goal, too.
We do. So today, we are looking for four members to step up, and so we're talking to you, and we really need your help. And we have a goal here on the show of $200 for this particular show, so please step up now. We need your help. And I just want to thank everyone who has donated so far. So much heartfelt gratitude for stepping up. We appreciate your support year after year, and for those new members who are helping us do what we do, we are indebted to you. So much gratitude. Of course, we're 100% volunteers here. So I'm going to remind you again, it's 604-684-8494 or cooperadio.org. And make sure to list Animal Voices as your favorite show. Thank you so much for your support.
Media Democracy Days Vancouver is back for its 12th year with 2 days of discussion on the fight for democratic media. The event is taking place November 2nd and 3rd. On Friday, November 2nd, Media Democracy Days will host 3 hands-on workshops at the Vancouver Public Library. Later that evening, SFU Woodwards will host a film screening of Words of Witness and keynote speaker Sunera Tubani starting at 6 p.m. On Saturday, November 3rd, Media Democracy Day begins at noon with a keynote by activist and artist Ricardo Dominguez. There is also panel discussions ranging from science communication to political marketing and surveillance at the Vancouver Public Library Central Library. For more information about this event and a full list of programming, please visit MediaDemocracyDay.org.
Hi there. So I have some events to list for you guys. We have on Sunday, November 11th, UBC Activists for Animals Club is hosting a field trip to 2 animal sanctuaries in Mission, BC, Hearts on Noses Pig Sanctuary and Saints Sanctuary for Senior and Special Needs Animals. And let me let you know that these groups are very, very much needed in our community, because where do these animals go when nobody wants them, right? So right now they are looking for people who can carpool and drive others in the group to Mission. They'll be leaving in the morning from Vancouver, visiting 2 sanctuaries in Mission from 11 to 3, and then going to Port Moody for lunch at Chomp Vegan Eatery before coming back to Vancouver. To find out more and to RSVP and offer rides, I recommend going to their Facebook group, which is called UBC Activists for Animals. You must be a member of a club to attend this activity, and you don't need to be a student.
Club.
Oh, a member of their club.
Yes.
Sorry.
Student.
But you don't need to be a UBC student to join, and it's only $2. So it's well worth it.
Yeah, you said you've been to Saints before.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about what that's like? So it's a rescue society and sanctuary for special needs animals.
Exactly. Or seniors as well. It basically takes in a lot of animals that I guess other rescues can't find homes for. They of course have special needs and they're older, so you know, the average person doesn't want that as a pet. And they do try to find homes for their animals as well, but if they can't find a home, they'll keep them and give them the best life that they can, which is pretty wonderful, I have to say.
And Hearts and Noses is, of course, a great place to support as well. Pig Sanctuary, a lot of pot-bellied pigs who are small and cute when they're babies, and then they actually grow up to be really big. And then Janice, who's a wonderful person at Hearts and Noses, she takes them all in, and they become her companions, her children, and it's such a wonderful place to support, so thanks for that event.
Yeah, they're both great organizations. Another event coming up is on November 23rd, that's a Friday, at 7 p.m. It's Vancouver Meatless Meetup is presenting a fundraising dinner for the MS Society at Po Kong, a vegetarian restaurant, which is 1334 Kingsway. So people who attended the last fundraiser said it gave them the warm fuzzy, so we are doing it again, and this time it is for the Multiple Sclerosis Society of BC. Po Kong has given us a special charity price for this dinner, so all proceeds above the cost of the meal are given to the MS Society. The menu includes actually daikon cakes or turnip cakes, wonton soup, deluxe colorful mixed vegetables, spicy green beans, fresh enoki mushroom and spinach chow mein, tasty breaded shiitake mushrooms, bean curd skin rolls in black bean sauce.
I love that.
Sounds amazing. Orange cutlets, vegetarian steak with black pepper sauce, ginger fried gai lan and yu choy, which is very high in calcium and vitamins, so good for you as well. Some steamed rice. So to register, please go to www.meetup.com/meatlessmeetup.
And I have to say that I was one of the people that went. I don't know if I got the warm fuzzies, but I went to the last one, that Meatless Meetup, which I'm also a part of, that we had. And wow, was it ever a lot of food, and it was a great fundraiser too for a local charity.
Yeah. And another thing coming up too is Liberation BC's November Volunteer Night. So that will be happening on November 25th in preparation for Paul McCartney's upcoming concert, just to remind people, you know, about his love for animals. And just one other thing I want to mention is the vegan prom date has finally been announced.
Yay!
So that's very exciting. It's going to take place March 9th at the Wise Hall, and this is a 19-plus only event. I remember I went last year, and it was amazing. It was great food, lots of fun, and dancing.
This is in Vancouver, we should mention, because they do have vegan proms in other parts of the world, probably just Portland, but this is the Vancouver
weekend. This is the Vancouver one, and it's at the Wise Hall just off Commercial Drive. And just to let you guys know, if you have any animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thank you so much for that. Today's first interview is with Camille Labchuk, who is a recent Toronto Law School graduate and current articling student, and she plans to practice animal law in the future. Earlier this year, Camille made the news when she went to the Ontario Human Rights Commission to make a case for recognizing ethical veganism as a human right under provincial legislation in Ontario. And she is here today to speak with us about this endeavor. Hello, Camille, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Hi.
Thank you for being on the show today in honor of the upcoming World Vegan Day on November 1st. What you did earlier this year to bring a solid case regarding ethical veganism to the forefront of the attention of the province of Ontario's human rights law system, I would think is setting a precedent for legislations in other areas of the country and perhaps the world for the future. Can you tell us what instigated your action to make this a case in front of your provincial human rights commission?
Right. Well, like you said, I think it's kind of the direction the law is moving in, and the way society is moving toward protecting more rights for people and making our society more inclusive for all individuals and respecting their beliefs. So I kind of got interested in this when I was involved with an organization formerly called Lawyers for Animal Welfare. We've since renamed it as Animal Justice Canada. And we were approached by a woman who was a veterinary student at the University of Guelph, and she'd been told that after she performed a routine spay-neuter operation as part of her training, that she would have to put down the dog upon whom she performed the operation. So we got involved and realized that there was a case here to be made that it was contrary to Ontario's Human Rights Code to force her to do so if ethical veganism was considered a form of creed, which is sort of like a religion. So that's kind of how I came into the issue. And we learned about a year ago, last summer, I believe, that the Ontario Human Rights Commission, which is a body that studies discrimination and human rights in Ontario, that commission was considering redefining the word creed and considering how, in the modern context, it would be best to define that term. So we thought, hey, this is a great opportunity to get in there, present to them, and give a little bit of information on why there's a strong case to protect ethical vegans, people who believe it's wrong to use animals for human purposes, from discrimination.
So could you just go back a little bit and explain to our listeners what is meant by creed? What is the definition of creed, and how does it currently fall under the lifestyle of veganism according to the Ontario Human Rights Code? You had mentioned that religion factors into there, but veganism isn't really a religion, or is it? Can you explain that?
Sure. Well, the term creed is often used in a way that's sort of synonymous with religion. In Ontario's Human Rights Code, the legislation mentions creed, but it doesn't say anything about religion. In other provinces, they use the word religion or religion and creed. So the way we see that, it means that creed is something distinct from religion and something that encompasses more than simply religious-based beliefs, but more of kind of all-encompassing ethical beliefs about many worldviews, and not simply those defined by religion or simply traditional religions. So the issue in Ontario really is that what creed means, or does creed mean something else? The legislation itself doesn't define creed. The Ontario Human Rights Commission issues some policies which are intended to sort of interpret the terms in the code and help lawmakers apply them and give some guidance to potential applicants. And businesses and service providers and employers and so on, and anyone who might face a claim. So presently the Human Rights Commission says, no, we don't think that creed includes secular or moral or ethical beliefs or political convictions. But there's some case law there that sort of left the definition open. So the point of all of this is that it's not really clear right now. There's a pretty good framework and a pretty good argument for including ethical veganism and other secular beliefs under the rubric of creed, but nobody has definitively said at this point that it is a form of creed. So the question is still a little bit up in the air, but in my position, there's a clear case for making ethical veganism a type of creed.
You've argued that hospital patients and prison inmates, for example, currently do not have the human right under veganism to have food provided to them that doesn't conflict with their belief system under the Human Rights Code, but that it is covered under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So how are such situations dealt with now, and how would recognizing veganism as a human right under the law change these types of institutional situations for vegans? I guess that would be under the Human Rights Code.
Right. Well, as you mentioned, governments already have to respect freedom of conscience in their dealings with members of the public. So whether somebody is involved in a hospital or is an inmate in a prison, if that person, for conscientious reasons, is a vegetarian or vegan, then they will already be entitled to receive vegetarian or vegan food, for example. But, of course, the Charter of Rights only applies to government action. So private actors like employers, for instance, or universities even, mm-hmm. Aren't compelled to act in ways that respect those people's freedom of conscience. So what would assist if the human rights laws in Ontario covered these types of ethical beliefs like veganism? It really would provide more complete coverage to ethical vegans who wish to have their beliefs respected and act in accordance with them. So as I mentioned, the case of the veterinary student, right. Who was asked to kill a healthy dog, or employees who might feel bullied or harassed by their bosses or coworkers at work for their status as ethical vegans. These types of situations are something that would be covered by human rights law in Ontario, ethical vegans would receive coverage from human rights law in Ontario if Creed is found to include ethical veganism.
So apparently there have been cases already, such as, you know, people in the private sector, private relationships, such as people at work who have to or told they have to wear uniforms that contain leather, or even being provided food at work that they can't eat because of their vegan beliefs. One item also that I had read in your paper that you presented was one employee had refused to be vaccinated for mumps in the workplace because obviously that vaccine is tested on, or it's made with chicken embryos, and that person wasn't given an alternative. So can you talk about how, I guess right now we don't really have anything for that, and I'm not speaking of just Ontario, but probably just Canada in general, and I think this is setting a precedent, would you say? Or do you know if this case law exists in other parts of North America, or would it be really setting a precedent if the Ontario Human Rights Commission makes a ruling upon this?
Well, the case you mentioned about the vaccination for mumps is interesting. That was a case in California, actually, that came out, I think it was over a decade ago now, but the issue was whether an employee had to or could sue for wrongful dismissal, basically, after he was fired for refusing to get a mumps vaccination that was made from chicken embryos. So in that case, the issue is a little bit different, and the courts rejected the argument, saying that veganism isn't a religion. Now, a religion is a bit different from a creed, which is my argument here.
Right.
And, of course, California is different from Ontario and other states and other provinces as well and other countries around the world. So, yes, as far as I know, this would be precedent-setting in terms of having creed define ethical veganism. There are some interesting cases out of the U.K., where a man was fired based on his status as an anti-hunt saboteur. So he was a longtime animal rights activist and believed that people should not hunt foxes. And he went on hunt sabotaging efforts back when fox hunting was still a thing in Britain. And his employers, he was a gardener, his employers found out about his activities and fired him on that basis. And he sued them and actually was successful because the court found that those political beliefs were protected. Now, again, every jurisdiction's a little bit different, so the laws in Britain were a little bit different from the ones we have in Ontario. But I think what the case law shows around the world, and there's some information from other Commonwealth countries as well, but I think it shows a general trend towards accepting that comprehensive secular belief systems like ethical veganism are something that merit protection, whether it's because it's important to protect political beliefs, or whether because they're so much like religions and they fill the same purpose in people's lives that they deserve protection as well.
We are evolving so much in our society, so I think it's imperative that the law system evolves with us. So how far away do you think we are from having this kind of legislation just to be commonplace in our North American society? It's just starting now, I feel.
I think you're right. Likely it's inevitable that as people become more aware and more sensitive to different viewpoints and beliefs, they'll start to realize that if we decide as a society to protect people who have religious beliefs in whatever religion they choose, then we have to protect people who have beliefs that are so much like religion in so many ways that are indistinguishable. There's a lot of ways that ethical veganism is sort of occupies a place of similar importance in people's lives, and the same with many secular beliefs. It doesn't have to be veganism, but people who have a comprehensive belief system that's so important to them that it guides their behavior. Mm-hmm. I think that type of thing, it's becoming self-evident to society and hopefully lawmakers that we need to provide some protection there so that they find themselves in the same situation as somebody who has beliefs for religious reasons.
You presented this case to the commission this March. What was the feedback like that you received from your presentation, and what has become of this proposal since then?
Well, yeah, I had a great time presenting the paper. There was a wonderful group of people there. Many of them were presenting on different issues, and actually one other man presented on this same issue. So I think it showed to the commission that there is definitely support for this and that it's becoming an issue. You know, the commission also had a case recently, the tribunal, which is the body that hears complaints, as opposed to the commission, which makes policy. The tribunal had a case recently where somebody claimed discrimination on the basis of ethical veganism. So I think they were alive to the issue and really interested in hearing about it and why they should care about it as policymakers. So the reception was really good. The commission's process is ongoing, so I don't expect them to release their new policy on Creed for at least 6 months, possibly even a year. So it's still some time away. But I've been in touch with them since that time, and they're still continuing to get feedback. So I'm really hopeful that they'll respond positively to the suggestions in their ultimate report.
I think you've just done a great thing to bring this issue out to the forefront of society, the law system, because it takes people like you and activists to actually bring these issues to society and to let people know that they're important. Thank you for coming on the show today to speak with us about your activism and stating a case for veganism as a human rights issue before the law. To find out more about what Camille does in her life as an activist, you can check out our website, CamilleLabchuk.ca. Thanks, Camille.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You're listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio. And we are reminding you to call 604-684-8494 to become a member today. We really need your help, or cooperadio.org. I have just a few news items for you. Los Angeles is poised to become the largest city in the U.S. to ban pet shops from selling dogs, cats, and rabbits obtained from commercial breeders. The Los Angeles City Council tentatively voted 12-2 on an ordinance that officials say will target puppy mills and prevent tens of thousands of animals from being euthanized in city shelters each year. Individuals will be allowed to buy directly from breeders, but pet stores will be limited to selling animals obtained from shelters, humane societies, and registered rescue groups. Stores violating the restrictions could face misdemeanor charges and a penalty of $250, which would increase with repeat offenses. So I guess there's a bit of a danger here that, it'll just go all online and more underground. But this is great for just getting the word out about what puppy mills are. So the ban's already been adopted in smaller cities in California, such as Irvine, Hermosa Beach, and West Hollywood. In Canada, it's Mississauga, Ontario, Toronto, Ontario, and Richmond, BC. I think that's the only one in BC. I looked up Burnaby. I couldn't find anything about that. Hopefully soon, though.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yes. One thing to consider is that most dogs and cats are purchased online, and yeah, breeders try to cover up their identity on there. So just be really careful. For more information, you can try a website like shutdownpuppymills.com to learn more. And then on to foie gras. A group of European lawmakers, including a member from France's Green Party, have joined animal rights campaigners in a bid to ban the production and sale of the French delicacy foie gras across the European Union. Foie gras is a popular national dish in France, of course, and it's made from force-feeding grain to ducks or geese to produce a fatty enlarged liver.
That's huge news.
Yeah.
The EU is a very, very large expanse of land.
Yeah, currently, where was it? Currently, foie gras is actually banned in 22 European Union nations. You're not allowed to produce it, but you are allowed to import and sell it. So that's kind of what they're looking at banning next. And of course, it's huge in France, with some 35,000 people involved in foie gras production. So demand for the ban is likely to not go down well. And yeah, that's pretty big news. Hopefully that continues to gain speed. Very interesting. And then on to Canadian news, just quickly. The International Fund for Animal Welfare reported that the Canadian Senate has just released its report on the management of gray seal populations on Canada's East Coast and recommends spending millions in taxpayer dollars on a project that includes the call of 70,000 gray seals. And there's an article online on IFAW, which explains why this is a terrible idea. And, yeah, basically there just hasn't been enough science, and there's so many other variables, and it's basically being slammed by scientific critics as just a terrible experiment that's expensive. And really what they need to do is stop the fishing going on there, the commercial fishing.
Because they argue that the seals are eating the fish and all they care about is the fishing industry.
Yeah, and the Department of Fisheries has been deliberately allowing quotas and catches that have exceeded the level that fisheries have said was sustainable. So yeah, there's lots more information online. Just wanted to share that quickly.
Thank you for that, Alyssa. Today's feature interview is with registered dietitian Ginny Messina, who I deeply consider to be an expert on nutrition, and so she is here today to answer all of our vegan nutrition-related questions in honor of the upcoming World Vegan Day. As well as working as a dietitian, Ginny is a public health nutritionist and has co-authored a textbook on vegetarian nutrition that is aimed at medical and nutrition professionals, as well as twice co-authored the American Dietetics Association's position on vegetarian diets and helped develop a food guide for vegetarians and vegans. In addition to that, Ginny recently authored a book called Vegan for Life, Everything You Need to Know to Be Healthy and Fit on a Plant-Based Diet. And she is here today to speak with us just about that. Hello, Ginny, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for coming on the show today to spend a mere 23 minutes with us to scrape the surface of your well of knowledge when it comes to nutrition, and especially plant-based nutrition at that. I'd like to get right into our nutrition questions for you and start with talking about some vitamins and nutrients that not only should vegans be cognizant of, but all people should, I think. So vitamin B12 to start with, which is typically found in animal sources. You call it probably the most interesting nutrient in human nutrition. Why is that?
Well, it's certainly the most interesting nutrient in vegan nutrition because vitamin B12 is the only nutrient that's not naturally found in plant foods. So all vegans need to take a supplement or use fortified foods to meet B12 needs. And it's so easy to do this, so it's just a matter of being informed, since the consequences of not getting enough vitamin B12 are serious. And vegans who don't take B12 run the risk of developing anemia or nerve problems. But it can be a big issue when people develop deficiencies, but it's a small issue in vegan nutrition because it's so easy to get enough just by taking a supplement.
Isn't it true, though, that from what I've read, that even meat eaters are at risk of being B12 deficient sometimes?
Oh, absolutely. You know, for one thing, everyone over the age of 50, regardless of what they eat, should be taking a vitamin B12 supplement.
Okay.
And this is because as people get older, changes in the digestive tract make it harder to absorb vitamin B12 from meat and dairy foods, but the kinds of changes that take place don't affect absorption of B12 from supplements. And I think that a lot of meat eaters, a lot of omnivores don't know this, so they run the risk of a deficiency because they don't know that they're supposed to start taking B12 supplements when they turn 50. And so I think that omnivores could actually end up being at higher risk for deficiency as they get older compared to vegans because smart vegans are already supplementing with vitamin B12 as they get older.
Jackie has a question for you.
Okay. Sure. Can you talk a little bit about iron? Cow flesh or beef, for example, is a rich source of iron, and I think that people might feel dependent to get their iron from animal flesh. What do vegans need to know about getting adequate iron from plant foods, and especially when it comes to the absorption of the iron?
Well, you know, one thing that's really surprising to a lot of people is that plant foods are actually very high in iron. And, for example, beans and soy foods have much more iron than meat, including beef.
Okay.
So vegans typically eat fairly iron-rich diets. But as you probably know, the iron in plant foods isn't as well absorbed. because it's bound to compounds that are called phytates, and these compounds lower the absorption of iron.
Right.
This is easily resolved, though, just by eating foods that are rich in vitamin C, like citrus fruits, tomatoes, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, peppers, potatoes. I think most people know, are pretty familiar with vitamin C-rich foods. And the vitamin C actually breaks the bond between phytates and iron and helps with its absorption. So as long as vegans are sort of naturally eating plenty of iron, as long as they're making an attempt to include good sources of vitamin C in as many meals as possible to make sure that iron's being well absorbed, then iron nutrition is not an issue for vegans.
Let's talk about calcium. I've always thought that animal protein actually leaches calcium from the bones, whereas plant protein does not. But I read about a recent Adventist health study that has shown that apparently both soy plant protein and animal protein from cow's milk, that is, are beneficial for bone health, it says. Can you please comment on this finding and provide some clarification about the truth when it comes to getting your calcium from either plant-based or animal-based sources?
Yeah, calcium is really interesting because 20 years ago or so, we really did think that diets that were high in protein caused calcium to be lost from the body. But what we know now is that protein is probably good for bone health, or at the very least, it doesn't seem to be harmful. And that's in part because higher protein diets are associated with better calcium absorption, so that can be good for bone health if we're absorbing more of the calcium from our diet. But unfortunately, many vegans continue to believe that their lower protein diet protects them from osteoporosis, and that just isn't true. Vegans do need to get adequate calcium. It's great to get it from plant foods, though, because so many of the plant foods that provide calcium have other compounds in them that protect bone health. For example, we can get lots of calcium from foods like kale, collards, broccoli, Chinese cabbage like bok choy, and at the same time, we'll get things like vitamin K and vitamin C from those foods, both of which contribute to bone health. And cow's milk doesn't have either of those nutrients. And another example is that fortified soy milk or calcium set tofu are foods that provide both calcium, and they're fairly high in protein that is, as you mentioned, can be good for bones, the protein from soy foods. So the bottom line is that it is important to get enough calcium, but you can get it from plants, and there are lots of advantages to getting it from plants.
Well, thank you for that. Vitamin D is another significant aspect of nutrition to discuss, especially when it comes to veganism, as natural sources of vitamin D are found in animal foods and in sunshine as well, of course, in the form of fortified foods. But for those of us who want to follow a vegan diet, what should we know about our vitamin D needs? And do we need to be concerned about adequate intake via fortified plant-based foods, especially if we live in a dark and dreary place like the Pacific Northwest coast here, where I know you also live, and we don't get a lot of sunshine here throughout the year?
Yeah, I live in a dark and dreary place, too, and I'm looking out the window right now, and there's no chance I'm going to be making any vitamin D today. That's
exactly.
For sure. Everybody gets vitamin D from the exact same sources, from fortified foods, supplements, or sunshine. Very few foods are naturally rich in vitamin D, and I think many people don't realize that cow's milk is not naturally rich in vitamin
D. Right, it's fortified.
It's fortified. It has it only because it's fortified with it. So it's no more natural to get your vitamin D from cow's milk than it is from any other fortified food like fortified soy or rice milk. But yeah, for those of us who live here in the dreary Northwest and many other parts of the world too, vitamin D supplements or fortified foods are necessary regardless of what kind of diet you're eating. And this is especially true for people over the age of 50, for people who have darker skin, because both of these things make it harder to make enough vitamin D from sunlight. And even if you're making enough vitamin D in the summertime, it's not necessarily enough to last you throughout the year. So vitamin D supplements can be important for a lot of people, depending on where they live. It depends on where they live. It doesn't depend on what kind of diet they eat. This is for meat eaters as well as vegans.
That's good to know. I'd like to ask you about omega-3 fats. Can you talk about the different types of omega-3s and how vegans can get enough of both, please?
Yeah, it's a fairly complex topic because there are two types of omega-3 fats, and people sometimes get them confused. They sometimes think that they're interchangeable. They're real, and they're not. They're completely different compounds. Only one of them is essential in the diet, and this is ALA, which is an abbreviation for alpha-linolenic acid. This is the short-chain omega-3 that we can get from foods like flaxseed or hemp seed or walnuts or walnut oil. And we only need small amounts of those foods, just a few teaspoons every day in order to meet requirements. But it is important to include those foods in vegan diets to make sure that you're getting some ALA. The other omega-3s are DHA and EPA, the long-chain omega-3 fats, and these are the ones that are found in fish oil. They're not considered essential because we can actually synthesize them ourselves. But synthesis is pretty inefficient, so people who don't eat fish tend to have low blood levels of DHA and EPA. And even though one theory is that you can manipulate your diet by reducing intake of certain vegetable oils, for example, to improve synthesis, that hasn't really been shown to be very effective. So since DHA and EPA support heart health, a lot of people end up taking fish oil supplements, and the jury is kind of out on whether vegans need these supplements too, because we're already eating heart-healthy diets for the most part. But if people want to include these long-chain omega-3 fats, there are vegan supplements that get them from algae. And it's exactly the same as the omega-3s that are found in fish. And, in fact, algae is where fish get their omega-3s. So for vegans who want to include these in their diet, there are good sources available for us.
Well, thanks for that. I didn't realize that, as you say, the jury is sort of out because I don't personally supplement with DHA. I know vegans who do, but I don't think I'm suffering from it. So that's quite interesting information to know. Let's talk about gluten, since attention to gluten sensitivity seems to be very mainstream these days and since the past several years. And I don't recall gluten issues ever being addressed in the past as much as they are now, such as in the food products and grocery stores and at restaurants, for example. So why all the attention to gluten these days? Is this something new that people have become aware of in recent years? And what do we need to know about our intake of gluten and potential gluten sensitivities as it pertains to our health?
Well, the most important gluten intolerance is of course, celiac disease, which is relatively uncommon. It affects just about 1% of the population. But people who have this disease absolutely cannot have any gluten in their diet at all. So the big push recently for gluten-free foods has definitely been helpful to them because it's extremely easy to avoid gluten these days. There are so many wonderful gluten-free foods on the market. But at the same time, there's so much interest in gluten that many people have decided that they have an intolerance without getting tested. And since a true intolerance to gluten is actually pretty uncommon, I think that a lot of people are actually overdiagnosing or misdiagnosing themselves. So if you think that you're intolerant to gluten, it's really important to get tested, to have the appropriate blood test to make sure that this is what your problem is before you start changing your diet.
Well, I guess this wouldn't be a complete interview on vegan nutrition if I didn't ask you about protein. I hope that from listening to our show by now, our listeners know that it's very doable and easy, in fact, to get adequate amounts of protein in our diets via only plant-based foods. And no, we don't have people in our North American society walking about with kwashiorkor, which is the name of the disease for protein deficiency. What I'd like you to speak about is on the percentage of the total daily calories that we should be aiming for daily protein intakes, and to give some examples, if you could, on exactly what kinds and amounts of vegan foods could make up this daily intake.
Sure. The percentage of calories that you need to get from protein is actually going to vary a lot. It depends on your calorie intake. It depends on how active you are, a lot of different factors. But most people probably need somewhere between 8 and 12% of their calories as protein. People who are eating low-calorie diets need to aim more towards that the higher end of that range. But you don't need to do any fancy calculations to figure out how much protein you need and to figure out how to get it. The key to getting adequate protein is mostly to make sure that you're meeting calorie needs, that you're meeting enough calorie needs to maintain an optimal weight, that you consume a variety of healthy plant foods, and that you include at least 2 servings of legumes in your diet every day. And legumes aren't, people think of legumes as beans, and beans are a big part of that group, but legumes aren't just beans. They also include peanuts and peanut butter, and they include all of the vast array of soy foods like tofu and tempeh and veggie meats. And a serving is a pretty small amount of food. It's just a half a cup of cooked beans or tofu, or a quarter cup of peanuts, or 2 tablespoons of peanut butter, or an ounce of veggie meat. So, I think that some new vegans in particular, I think, sometimes get a little overwhelmed at the idea of having 2 servings of legumes per day, because if you're like me and you grew up in a family where those foods were never on the menu, it can seem a little bit off-putting. But if you eat a peanut butter sandwich for lunch and a veggie burger for dinner, and the rest of your diet is very varied and healthy, then you're going to meet protein needs.
That's enough, exactly.
Yeah, that's it. And it's pretty easy to do, and it's easy even for people who don't like beans or aren't familiar with them. So meeting protein needs, you do need to include legumes in your diet, but it's not difficult, and vegans are not, as you noted, vegans are not falling short on protein, not suffering from protein deficiencies.
Kwashiorkor. I mean, I don't think people even know what that is. It's
yeah.
I like the word, but it's odd. People, it's just like, it's not heard of. You don't see people with kwashiorkor.
So no, you don't.
Some people claim that eating vegan or vegetarian would be too expensive for them to maintain as a reason for not going veg. In fact, there was even a story on the news this week that I saw in which a person who was just trying to live off a welfare stipend of $25 per week for food for a month, he said he just barely survived and he was always hungry, and this was just to feed himself in any manner, not necessarily vegan, I highly doubt. So this really surprised me, because I'm really frugal when it comes to buying fresh fruits and vegetables, but I also know that buying vegan processed foods can be expensive. So overall, what is your advice to people who are on a budget to keep the costs low when aiming to eat a healthy vegan diet that includes all the nutrition that they need?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I think that we vegans have a real advantage when it comes to eating cheaply, because beans are the cheapest food in the world, and they're packed with so much great nutrition that if you're focusing on these foods in your diet, and learning to cook beans from scratch, that can go a long way towards saving money. And, you do need to think ahead. You need to soak your beans, and then sometimes it takes a while to cook them, but it's not hands-on food preparation time. All you have to do is soak them and then put them on the stove and turn the heat on, and that's it. You don't have to do anything else. And if time is really an issue, and obviously that's mm-hmm. the issue for most of us, is saving money and not spending hours and hours in the kitchen, then I think the best approach is to do bulk cooking, by making a couple huge pots of beans over the weekend and then flavoring them with different seasonings every night. For example, you could cook up a big pot of lentils and serve them a couple nights as a soup with the addition of sautéed onions and spinach, and then maybe on the next night add some soaked raisins and some curry powder and make, curried lentils and serve them over rice. So you can do bulk cooking without having it get boring. You just make the base ingredient and then kind of spice it up and jazz it up a little bit throughout the week. Buying bulk grains and buying fruits and vegetables in season, the same kind of things that omnivores do to save money. Those are all things that vegans can do as well. And also, I like to remind people that frozen vegetables tend to be cheaper than fresh vegetables, and they are just as nutritious. They don't always taste as good, but they're just as good for you, and they cost less. So for people who really, really need to eat on a budget, that's another option for saving some money.
Those are some really great tips. Thanks, Ginny. I have a question that I like from our listener, Marv. He asks, what's your view towards people who were vegans or vegetarians for years, but then claimed it caused them to become anemic and gaunt? So now they discredit veganism. How do you respond to this?
Well, without a doubt, some people do run into problems on vegan diets. I hear from people who are not feeling well on vegan diets or are developing deficiencies, but It's not because they're vegan. It's because their diets aren't healthy. They're eating vegan diets that aren't healthy. And I think, you know, so many people believe that you can just eat a variety of plant foods and be assured of meeting all your nutrient needs. And that's not necessarily true. Everyone, whether they're vegan or not, needs to give some attention to meeting nutrient needs. And I also, I see many people who are eating very restrictive versions of vegan diets, eating diets that are too low in fat, or avoiding legumes because they think high protein intakes are bad for them, or they're not taking appropriate supplements like vitamin B12. So it's not veganism that's the problem. It's suboptimal vegan diets that cause the problems. And we just need to make sure that people are informed, that they understand how to plan healthy vegan diets. And then I think we can avoid almost all of these problems that people run into with deficiencies and not feeling well.
Well, speaking of being informed, this informational session so far has been very informative, but I would be concerned only that a listener who is not yet vegan but wants to try out the vegan lifestyle might be dissuaded from all the information presented here. It's a lot of info, especially if it's just all coming to you at once. Perhaps they might be concerned that they just must make so much of an effort nutritionally to follow a vegan diet, whereas they feel that they have to virtually make no effort at all on a regular omnivorous diet. What would you say to a person who feels this way with regards to making such a transition from omnivore to vegan or vegetarian?
Yeah, I know. That's a really important question. That's a really important issue. First of all, it's a myth that people eating an omnivore diet don't need to make an effort to stay healthy. Things like iron deficiency anemia is very common among omnivores. And we also see lots of evidence that many omnivores don't get enough calcium. You know, people think that if you include dairy foods in your diet, you automatically get calcium. Not necessarily true. As I mentioned, a lot of people over the age of 50 might be deficient in vitamin B12. And also people who are eating more flexitarian diets, who are eating healthy omnivore diets, which if you're an omnivore, you should be doing by limiting the amount of animal foods in your diet, they can run into problems with B12. A lot of omnivores fall short on fiber and also on nutrients like potassium. So the fact of the matter is that everybody needs to make some effort to eat a healthy diet. I think that some ways of getting nutrients from plant foods sound more difficult to people just because they're new. But, you know, it's really easy to learn how to do that. Once you know a handful of plant foods that supply calcium, a handful of plant foods that you like that are good sources of calcium, then those are the foods that you eat instead of milk, and it becomes just second nature. There's a little bit of a learning curve with going vegan, but
as there is with anything new in your lifestyle,
Absolutely with anything, and with veganism, of course, it is so worth it when you consider the benefits of eating more compassionately and eating more responsibly. So that little bit of a learning curve is just totally worth it, and it's not hard.
Well, I'd like to end this interview. We've got a couple minutes left with a question that probably doesn't get asked too often. You a few months ago wrote an article that I really liked about umami. Can you explain what is umami and why should we add it to our diets?
Oh yeah, it's one of my favorite topics, and that was a blog post that got lots of attention. Umami has been dubbed the fifth taste. It's a sort of hard to define flavor that tends to predominate in a lot of animal foods, especially aged cheeses and fish sauces. And so my theory is that some new vegans find themselves missing animal foods and they feel like there's something missing in their diet. They're not quite sure what it is. It's possible that it's umami, that it's this flavor that they're missing. Umami is, for example, breast milk and infant formula are very rich in umami. So people start out their lives with a real penchant for this taste. Fortunately, it's really easy to add it to dishes. Fermented foods have lots of umami, so a splash of wine or a little bit of miso added to a dish gives it umami. Ripe tomatoes and ketchup, dried sea vegetables, nutritional yeast, mushrooms, olives, balsamic vinegar, all good sources of
sun-dried tomatoes.
Yeah, sun-dried tomatoes are wonderful. And so just a little bit of these ingredients added to bean and grain dishes and to soups can give you that flavor, and that's something that you feel like is missing. Really easy thing to do.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Jeannie, to answer our vegan nutrition questions. It was just excellent. I encourage our listeners to follow Jeannie Messina's work on her website, www.theveganrd.com, and to check out her book on vegan nutrition called Vegan for Life. Thanks, and have a good day.
Thank you. That was a great show for World Vegan Day, which is coming up on November 1st. That day was established in 1994 by the Vegan Society in the UK. 2012 marks the 68th anniversary of the term vegan.
Wow.
And thus the verbally clarified concept of veganism and the establishment of the Vegan Society. There you go.
Were you just Googling? That's awesome.
No, I have that memorized. Yes, of course I was. Love Google. So yeah, that was an awesome show. Thanks for organizing that, Allison. I found that nutrition interview to be just fascinating. It was really just packed.
We'll do it
everything
again
you
next
need to
year.
Know. Awesome.
That was great.
So yeah, thanks for listening. Of course, you're listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. We want you to call 604-684-8494 or go to coopradio.org to pledge your support and to keep us on the air.
We'll be around for about a half hour after the show to answer the phone as well. So
definitely.
By all means, yeah, some people don't want a phone while they're listening to our show, which is great.
Yeah.
Or just go to coopradio.org.
Yeah, definitely. And make sure to mention Animal Voices. But yeah, we are here on the phones. Please call us. Reminding everyone that when the final numbers are in, as tomorrow wraps up, we will do a draw for all the donors. So we have two books up for grabs, Becoming Vegan, which I consider to be an amazing vegan nutrition Bible, and a cookbook called The Inspired Vegan by Bryant Terry. It's a seasonal, whole foods-based, mouthwatering soul food. Amazing. I love Bryant Terry's books. And for those who can make it into Vancouver, we also are offering gift certificates to the winners of the draw, to Gorilla Food, which is a raw restaurant downtown, and Eternal Abundance on Commercial Drive, which offers local organic produce, raw meals, smoothies, and delectable desserts. So some good prizes up for grabs. Please give us a call and donate whatever you can to become a member of Co-op Radio now. Our past Animal Voices shows are all available on our website, animalvoices.org. If you want to keep up to date with what's happening around Vancouver and beyond in terms of animal justice and compassionate living, subscribe to our show on iTunes or any other podcatcher. We'd like to keep in touch with you, and you can find us on Facebook, Animal Voices Vancouver, and Twitter, Animal Voices YVR. Stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock. We're going to leave you with a song called Vegan Myths Debunked by Jonathan Mann. There's a little bit of language at the end from a animal abuser at a farm, so heads up on that.
Oh, no, there isn't.
That's not. No,
different song.
Different song. Oh, I love this one. Is this the protein one? Yay, I love this
Where
song.
Where do you get your protein?
Plants.
Right?
Yes, that's right, I am.
Can I ask you some questions then?
Sure, man, of course you can.
Are you ready for the questions then?
What are you waiting for?
Where do you get your protein? Protein, protein, only meat has protein. So where do you get your protein?
Actually, lots of things have protein.
Well, I never knew that before.
It's true.
Where do you get your calcium? Only milk has calcium. Healthy bones from cows, milk, calcium. I drink it, yum.
Lots of plants have calcium, and lots of calcium. And cholesterol, well, they have none of the fat found in milk.
Calcium, no fat?
No fat.
Greens give me calcium?
Lots of calcium.
What about our ancestors? Didn't they eat meat? If I wasn't supposed to eat it, then why do I have these teeth?
Do your teeth look like a carnivore's, all sharp and pointy-like? No, you gotta cook your meat over a roaring firelight. Furthermore, all carnivores act on instinct, but humans make the choices they consider and they think. If humans evolved, they'd meet
about all the cows and all the gajillion chickens that are living on farms now.
If everyone were vegan, it wouldn't happen overnight. Demand would just decline, and so would the supply.
Isn't vegan food just bland and gross?
No, it's yummier than most.
You care about animals more, you do?
I care about animals, people too.
Aren't vegan men weak and girly?
I find vegan men quite sexy.
B12, so there, ha ha.
B12's